Juan, how do you feel now that you're back in the U.S.?
Yeah, much relaxed, and I feel safe.
Safer.
Yeah, man, I feel safer. Yeah.
I know it's a hard thing to talk about, but were you scared when you were detained?
Yeah, of course. But the most scared time is, before I know I got detained. It's just in the beginning, they just called me and asked me to follow them. I don't know who they are, so maybe I was afraid of maybe I was kidnapped by Hunan, government officials.
Or some thugs in that were paid by them or something. Some, local
Yeah,
criminals.
local communities paid by local government. Yeah.
So this happened. Can you tell us what happened, how it happened when you first were taken in? You were at a film festival?
August 24th, I went to a film festival in a gay bar in Beijing, on and off. And the last day, there was a film festival on China, Japan, gay lesbian film.
Yeah.
So because most of the participants, they don't even know the sponsor of the event, and because of sickness, the sponsor didn't come. I was the only person who know this guy, so
Oh.
they invited me to give to introduce the sponsor of the film festival. So then that afternoon, somebody told me that I was followed by some guys, but I thought it was they were following the event, not following me. So I just replied that I don't care. Okay. So after the event, I had a dinner with friends. And after dinner, I went to a restaurant, a hotel, to have tea with another friend. After 11 o'clock, I took a taxi back home. And just nearby, my house, it's our community, my house. I found, some cars come quite close to me, some before, some behind. So it was quite strange and unusual, and I realized something will happen. Okay.
You in the taxi.
In the taxi, I found some
Yeah.
cars behind me, quite close, and some car before our taxi, and they seemed like all quite close to us. So I realized something will happen.
So did they grab you right away, or what happened when you get out of the taxi?
Okay, they just in front of the house I was living, our taxi were ordered to stop, and a group of men asked me to follow them. So then I've no choice.
How many people?
I don't know, but in a car, in a car I was, in a car taking me to the detention center, it's about four people in my car, but one car before and one car
Oh, I
after.
see. But did they explain why they were asking you to follow them?
They didn't explain and they didn't show ID. Yeah.
So you must have freaked out.
Yeah, of course. Especially, just in a place, the detention center is in a suburb. It's not in a city. So, just Before we got to the detention center, there was a place that no people, and all, you know, it's all dark.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was quite afraid of. Yeah. Yeah. I become really afraid of.
But when you got there, you knew it was a detention center, or was it like a prison, or what did it look like?
It looks like, actually, I don't know what the prison like. I have no experience, but the detention center, it's almost like a prison, yeah. It's for criminal suspicious. You know, we were all treated as prison, yeah.
What was it? I mean, is it barbed wire, or is it fences, or is it like a office? What does it look like? Do you know?
Because you know, my classes were taken away. I can't watch, so I don't really what it looks like. I don't know.
So when they took you inside, what did they do to you? Fingerprint you, or what did they do?
They told me I was suspected for, you know, releasing state secrecy, and I got detained, and I should, you know, report, I should, you know, cooperate in all, you know, legal investigation. And then I was checked, you know, everything checked, and my clothes were changed, you know, to the clothes, you know, that they used in detention center.
So it's just like a gown or something, a shirt or something? I mean, special clothes?
Yes, special clothes, yeah.
Were you in a room by yourself? Or?
With some other people, yeah.
And how about, did they start questioning you right away, or did they let you sleep, or what?
You know, because it was almost at night. So they, you know, it's a kind of simple question. They asked who you are and where are you from, and what is your family members, and how to contact them. And it's kind of quite simple, just to inform you that you got detained. So the next day, they started to investigate me. So they worked really hard for a month.
So it was always questioning you?
Questioning about a document I sent to the outside, and questioning my, you know, my involvement in Henan issues. Yeah.
And so
AIDS issues.
The AIDS issue. Did they ask you, did you have to give names of people you sent the email to or whatever, or your document to?
Of course. You know, the two questions is about where I, you know, sent the document. And another is about who sent me the document.
Oh.
Okay. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't know who sent me the document. because somebody sent me the document by anonymous email account, and I deleted the email, so I don't know who sent me the document. Whom I sent the document to, because in the beginning, when they asked the question, I told them about you know, my contact overseas, because I don't want to mention people inside. I tried to avoid trouble for them, but you know, after I told all my contact overseas, you know, police told me that I illegally, provide information for overseas people, institutions and media. I broke the law, and so let's. Okay, I felt really proud of that. I had so many contacts overseas, but that become a reason for persecuting.
What were you afraid to? I mean, so you didn't have to. Did they try to get you to mention local contacts too?
Yeah, no, actually I couldn't tell everybody because it's email list. I don't know who subscribe sometimes. And sometimes I know, you know, because people always change. Okay, so, and I tried not to remember that well. Okay, but actually I couldn't remember everybody, yeah.
Yeah. How about the foreign names that you gave, the names in foreign countries? Were you weren't afraid they would get in trouble? No.
I didn't realize I were getting in trouble because I concerned about I will not give trouble to people in China.
How about people in foreign, you don't think they would get in trouble?
Probably
not.
Yeah, you know, I think they will not get in trouble.
Were these, would they be Chinese in foreign countries too, or no?
Because, you know, first, based on the law, if I broke the law, I have a reason to cooperate with our government, so to get some fact. But, you know, sometimes our government, you know, the reputation sounds not good. you know, in one way I need to cooperate. In another way, I have to concern about the safety of people.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I think, you know, it's better not to remember, you know, everybody in China. Yeah, yeah.
How about outside China? Do you think? Were you concerned about giving names of Chinese people outside China? No.
No, I didn't care about that. Maybe most of them they are based in Western countries, and they are, you know, scholars. I just send them the document. Not they send me the document.
Yeah.
Okay, that's different. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But so by then, like after you were held, you realized they were like public security people?
State security people, yeah.
They tell you that right away?
They told me after, you know, after I got detained, I realized it was by China, Beijing Municipal State Security Department. Yeah.
Did you allow to contact a lawyer?
According to the law, they told me that I could ask a lawyer for help, but you know, for state secrecy issues, I have to get permission from the state security department. Actually, I had no lawyer in a whole month.
Because it's too complicated.
In the beginning, you know, I didn't ask. I thought it would be quite easy, you know, I would not stay too long, I thought. So I didn't suggest it, I didn't ask for a lawyer. Finally, I found the situation might be complicated, I asked. But it seems that they don't want me to talk with a lawyer before, you know, they couldn't make a decision, yeah.
So you couldn't telephone people from...
Yeah, no telephone service inside. Yeah.
Did you, were you able to eat and, I mean, how,
yeah.
They feed you regularly or what?
Yeah, we can eat.
Yeah.
Eat. Yeah, we can eat. The food is not good as in a home, but if you have money, you can pay for good food.
But did you have some money with you, or did they take that from you, or what?
You know, we can pay money to the detention center to ask the police officials to buy, you know, food outside.
So you had some money you could use?
Yeah, we, you know, we were preparing for our institute registration, and unfortunately, I took a lot of money with me. Okay, so I took a lot of money with me, and It seems that, yeah, I can pay. I can pay.
So you were treated okay? You think you weren't physically hurt? Or you think, I mean, they didn't mistreat you physically?
It's really hard to say. Yeah, it's better not to talk about.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about the, in terms of, did you know that there were people, I mean, what did you think of people outside? Did you know there were some people trying to help you outside, or the newspapers were writing all these things? Did you have any idea?
Yeah, first I can imagine, okay, I can imagine, you know, people may, you know, help. Also, you know, I can find the attitude change of the police officials. So I can realize some you know, reaction outside. But after I got released, I really got surprised. I really got surprised. And especially, you know, my colleagues and friends in Beijing, they all took a strong action to help me. So that's, you know, that's really supportive, yeah.
I mean, the Washington Post even wrote an editorial.
Yes, that's true, yeah.
The president of China was visiting, or was about to visit, and he said that, the editorial said they should release for the visit.
I feel really proud of, you know, to get such support. Yeah, but it's better, you know, now to, you know, I'm concerned about a lot how to change, you know, the attitude of our government.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing, yeah.
What was the, just on one point, what were they upset about? Was this, that this document didn't go through, you didn't get permission to put it on the web or what?
The document was classified as secret, but, you know, I found it's not necessary to keep as a secret because it contains no state secret. According to our law, government should, you know, publicize the information on infectious disease to the public immediately. Okay, and according to China state secrecy law, there's no regulation for keeping public health information as, you know, state secrecy. Okay, so I feel it's my duty to let people understand how people, you know, how government, you know, were thinking about the issue, how they, you know, they were manipulate themselves inside. Okay, it's all the world knows the scandal in Henan, but they pretend nothing happened. That's not okay for me. So I feel it's my duty to publicize the document. Yeah.
So is the document still circulating around the websites?
The document is still, yeah, I can find the document on the website, yeah.
Did you have to take it off your own website, or?
The document is not in my website. I sent the document to two email groups.
Oh.
So people put the document in different website.
Oh, so it's still out there?
It's still there, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still there.
Why do you think they released you then?
You know, Xinhua News Agency, you know, gave a reason that I cooperate well. I admit my, you know, crime, and I asked for tolerance, so government released me. And New York Times said it was because of international outcry, Chinese government released me. So maybe in one side I cooperate well, in another side our government also get a lesson, yeah.
So it's true that you cooperated, you think?
Finally, you know, you have to cooperate. Okay, you have no choice. Yeah.
You don't think you didn't release names of Chinese contacts, local contacts?
Some of our, you know, very active people, it's not necessary to keep them secret. They are quite outspoken, and we are in the same group. Okay, they are not, they didn't send me the document. I sent the document to them. They didn't break the law. So it's no problem. Yeah. So some of my, close contact, were mentioned. Yeah.
How about this? Why do you think why did they take this action at that time? Because you've been, sending stuff to everybody before.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know, because it's not my decision.
Right.
Okay.
But do you think, I know that right before that you had it was in July, you had issued a statement about the web.
Yeah.
Web policy.
That's true.
And you said,
yeah,
I'm going to put up everything you can get me or something. Did you say that or?
Before August 1st, on August 1st, I took action to challenge, China's internet publication regulations. And because, it's quite ridiculous because we, people use our own money to help our society. And we were told that we broke the law, and all our computers and equipment should be taken away by government, and that's ridiculous. So in July the 1st, our office were closed by government. So now in August 1st, our website and will be closed down, or our computer will maybe taken away. So you have to. So for me, I become really angry. So I just went to the government office and told them, I'm editing. I was editing an illegal website on AIDS, and how to, give me an answer how to deal with that. So because of this website, UN organization decided to give me an award in Rome, but because of the intervention of Chinese government, UN changed the decision. So then I asked them for, to report this website to them, yeah.
So, but you don't think that, but they didn't say, when you were in detained, did they say that the reason you were detained was because of the website?
No, they didn't mention it.
Ah,
okay. The reason I was detained, I was told it was because of the Henan document.
So I know that some of the press accounts said that the reason you were released was because China was applying for this grant from the UN on AIDS, and the UN would not give it to them unless you were released.
Yeah, actually I don't know, because I don't know why they released me. Yeah. Because it's not my decision, yeah.
Right, definitely.
Yeah.
So you didn't, when you were inside, you had no idea that all these people were trying to help you?
I can understand, but I just couldn't imagine that, for China AIDS issues, we got so much support. Okay.
So you think, looking back, you think it was worth it? No, was anything worth it? I mean, I don't know how.
Actually, you couldn't, for such detention and suffering.
Yeah.
You couldn't, expect that. After, my release, it's something already happened. So you have to think, in a positive way.
Yeah.
After my release, we got our institute registered, and we got so many support.
Oh, you got the institute registered?
Yeah, we got our institute.
Do you have, is some academic institution willing to sponsor
yes,
you?
Yes, yes. A lot of, you know, colleges. And even a lot of people in China now are willing to work with us. Some of them, they felt, you know, quite sorry for, you know, marginalized our project in past years. They all want to stand, you know, close with government. So just, you know, ignore our existence. So now they found we also contributed.
So,
yeah.
So you think that, you know, sometimes people say that outside pressure doesn't help because it just makes the government more resistant. But you don't believe that?
I don't know, because people respond based on different reasons. And for me, in one hand, I don't want to give troubles to people inside, but in another hand, I think it's very necessary for people in this world to give a risk to human rights persecution in China. So that's, in general, I think it helps, yeah.
How about this whole idea of the right to criticize what the government does? Do you think, are you more outspoken now, or are you more careful?
I become, you know, much more careful. Yeah, I become much more careful. Yeah, I have to, because, you know, I don't want to, you know, to be jailed again. Yeah.
Oh, definitely not.
Yeah, but you know, AIDS epidemic is still really sometimes even dangerous than the plague. So sometimes you will have to be outspoken. You will have to, you know, influence the policy change to create a safe environment for our future. So that's, so you have to choose, you know, to not just police, also AIDS is also a dangerous issue, yeah.
Do you see, is there a distinction between criticizing like a policy, or if you don't criticize the party, then it's okay, right? I mean, in China, is that the distinction usually you can get away with, you don't criticize the party?
For me, most of my critics is about the policy or government action. I think, I'm not interested in a party politics. I don't care about who, you know, is taking, you know, over the power.
Yeah.
So who will be the leader? I'm not interested. Yeah.
So you're not interested in the ideology as much as
I'm interested in, you know, like ideology, morality, influence of the different group, political group or religious group. But actually, I don't care about who, you know, who is, you know, take over power.
Right.
Okay, it's better to. Yeah, sometimes it's a very complicated issue.
Yeah.
It's a very complicated issue.
In terms of the Henan situation, what do you think can be done from people outside China, like in the U.S., for instance?
Okay. A lot of people ask the question, and I think, you know, give support, moral support, financial support, or cooperation project, and to tell people you know about AIDS in China, it all helps. Especially for our group, we just registered, and we need financial support. So if people could, you know, want to help us, you know, you can contact me.
So we can give up the. It's the www.aizhi.com.
.org.
.org.
aizhi.org. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The in terms of what do you think that the government still has the government admitted doing all this stuff in the tainted blood issue, or have they just covered it up?
Chinese government has some change. In central level, they become more open and they want to admit the epidemic. But the problem is they don't want to keep in a big budget. So they want to use quite limited budget to face a big challenge. That's not realistic. And but they want to, at least, they want to, you know, face the challenge. For local government, there's no change. You know, then I don't expect a change. I think they should be put in jail because they, you know, because of, you know, the corruption and the blood selling, organized. Millions of people are now infected and sick.
So in that case, in the Henan province, the government, local government actually...
Should be put in jail.
No, but what did they do?
They organized the blood sale in 1990s.
And so they also, it wasn't individuals, it was the government.
It's government sponsored the blood selling in 1990s. In the whole province of Henan.
And the blood wasn't tested for anything?
The blood was not tested.
So how many people do you estimate got infected?
Millions. 1 million, 2 million, or 3 million. So actually, you know, I don't know exactly how much, but I believe at least 2 million in Henan, in Henan, only in Henan province.
I know I've read in the press some reporters try to get in, but generally it's hard to go in that area. Or what?
Yeah, journalists might got detained if they went there. Yeah.
Did you? You had visited there?
I didn't visit the villages. I visited 2 years ago. I got contacted with Dr. Gao, so my, you know. My mission was I organized people together and planned, you know, trips to Henan. So, and we organized journalists, doctors, and students, volunteers together. And we invited people from Henan to Beijing to work with us. So that's our strategy. And also we organized some small group to some villages, but not that much.
Did the so you didn't go to the villages, huh?
I not to go to the village myself. Okay, otherwise, you know, if our project will be closed.
How's Dr. Gao was the one that exposed this, right? Also.
No, she, Dr. Gao was.
What was her role?
Dr. Gao was. That was the person who spoke quite loudly about the epidemic. She's a microphone, okay. Uh-huh. She's not the first person who found the epidemic. And in 1995, a doctor in Henan found the epidemic. She reported to local provincial and central government about the epidemic in blood sellers, and she got fired. In 1995, so now she's in the U.S. And another doctor found the epidemic in 1999. 4 years later, another doctor found an epidemic. And I, fortunately, this doctor is not based in Henan. He's from Hubei, Wuhan city. Yeah. So a journalist in Henan reported the story, and he got fired. So Dr. Gao was a person who stood, you know, who stand up and speak quite loud about the situation. So because of, you know, New York Times and some other media, international media, you know, Henan issue become quite long to the international communities. So that's the contribution of Dr. Gao, yeah.
What, is she okay now?
She got, she even got some support from local government. She could work, but she still got much pressure. So sometimes government give her say, you know, he was not to speak to me.
I see, yeah. And you became friends with her.
I found her get, now left, and to the international society.
Yeah.
So I'm the person who left the people, student, together, and to let people know each other.
In terms of your relations with journalists, did you meeting these journalists, or did you think people would, the police or somebody would follow you, or no? And at that time
face the child cries in Henan, actually you don't have a reason to be afraid of the police, because the situation there is really serious.
Yeah.
People are dying, so.
So do you think, after all this, did they put any condition on you that you can't do certain things in the future, or what, any kind of conditions?
Even if they give, they put some conditions, I can't tell you. Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah, the condition is, yeah, maybe some conditions that I can't tell you.
Okay. But can you get, there was no condition on leaving, they didn't kick you out of the country?
I was released and sent back to my home, and I have my passport, and I have some basic freedom to move from one place to another place. Sometimes I can find, I may be, watched by somebody, yeah, but I kind of make sure, yeah.
But in terms of, a lot of times they just exile people, irritants.
Yeah, that's true.
They get kicked out. And
but for my case, I think our government, they explain my detention as a legal case. So if they, send me outside, argue for themselves. Okay, so it's better for them to respect my freedom. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. How about in terms of, Hong Kong now debating this implementation of Article 23, which involves some of the same laws that you were with, I guess. Do you think that's going to pass there?
Actually, I don't understand well about the Article 23, but I hope it will not be passed, because, Hong Kong is there, Hong Kong has been and China haven't been threatened by Hong Kong, it's a small city, not many people, and actually it's not a politicalized population. It's better for our government to respect the freedom, the self-determination of people in Hong Kong. Yeah.
although I think it might get passed anyway, but there's a lot of debate about that. So what are your plans now for your organization?
We hope we could continue our education, advocacy, and research on AIDS. To help people with AIDS, to have general, and also to policy change in AIDS issues, and also the most urgent issue for our fundraising. So if people could, donate money for us, that would be.
You've gotten a lot of grants over the years from different foundations. Do you think it's easier now to get money from foundations, or is it harder?
Some foundations become more interested to us, and some foundations become more converted. It depends on the policies. For some foundations, they have, a regular contact with Chinese government, and they have a lot of other, projects in China, so they may have to concern about the project safety, okay. For some projects, for some foundations, they don't have a regular base in Beijing, and they feel they are quite strong. They don't care about the political safety, so then they want to support us.
yeah. So they don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, they don't have to worry about that.
You know, a few years ago, I wrote a piece about you for the San Jose Mercury News.
Yeah.
And I said you were like a one-man NGO.
Yes, that's true.
Non-governmental organization.
Yeah.
And you're able to straddle both like kind of West Coast and U.S. West Coast, Los Angeles and China.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you still feel you can travel between the two countries?
Yes, I hope so. Yeah, and I think, you know, I could, you know, travel between China and the U.S. And but in general, you know, in the past 2 years, because of my personal life, my wife was studying here, and my project is there. So I have to travel between. Okay, maybe in the future I want to for some long term, you know, project. And but I think traveling is not a problem. Problem is money, okay, to pay the ticket. Yeah.
So you want to set up base in U.S.?
Yeah, maybe, you know, since we have a lot of friends who are working, who want to work together, maybe we can set up a base. You know, we already have an institute in China, and maybe we can set up a kind of base in the U.S.
You're looking at also, you think the, you know, it seems to me that this kind of restriction on the web is kind of be doomed because there's too many websites and there's no way they can control everything.
Yeah, that's
website.
True, that's true. Actually, the regulation who got implemented in August 1st was not implemented. And I feel really proud of that because, you know, when I went to the government office, the journalists also followed my action. They called the government, and the government replied really stupidly. So from that day, that law, you know, failed.
Was it?
Yeah, because they explained the law in a very stupid way. They said that this law will not deal with any personal website. Okay, so that means, you know, this law will not deal with personal website. So then most illegal website legal, you know, according to the law, legal, but government officials said, you know, the law cover will not cover, you know, this website.
Because most websites are personal.
Most websites are personal, so then, you know, the law who identified them illegal, you know, were explained as that this law will not deal with this website. Okay.
Do you still feel like, you know, I mean, you still feel you're a patriot, right? Do you like to use that word or not?
Yeah, of course, I'm a Chinese, and according to, you know, our law, and also my personal feeling, you know, I want to make contribution for our nation and our people. Yeah.
So, you is it just that? I mean, where do you find most receptive? The people, is it what country? You think U.S. or you think is there other countries that are more receptive to doing this work or Canada or whatever? What have you found?
Okay, I spend most of my time in China. And outside China, I spend most of my time in the U.S. Some reason is that for my, you know, I got invited by the U.S., you know, college, U.S. universities. Some reason is that, you know, my wife was studying in the U.S. So I'm not sure, you know, if China, you know, I was born in China and I grew up there, and I want to work there for public health issues, but sometimes, you know, I don't feel, you know, comfortable with the, you know, police department. But in the U.S., it's quite, you know, you have, you know, freedom of thinking and freedom of speech. Sometimes, you know, you can't agree with, everything, okay. And so they all have their own problems.
Okay. Definitely.
So actually, for me, I can, I can work. I can work even in China. Yeah.
So you don't think you think more people in terms of just in terms of the gay situation there? Do you think more people are coming out now in China?
Yes. Much more. Yes. Yes. A lot of young people. Especially in artist people and young generation, they want to, to talk with friends frankly about sexual orientation, sexual identity, and to talk with family members. So China become much more relaxed in sexuality. Yeah.
You think the parents are also too? They can be more accepting or more tolerant?
More tolerant.
Tolerant.
Yeah, in general. Yeah. But it's still not tolerant society. It's still not tolerant, but relative tolerant. Yeah.
So how about, a lot of people try to get asylum here, here claiming gay persecution?
Yeah.
Do you think it depends on the situation or what?
Some people they got persecuted in China and they have a reason to apply asylum. If a person in the United States got persecuted, maybe they can also apply asylum in China. Okay, but I think the problem is, some people have reason, and some people they just want to get a green card to get a permanent residency status. I can understand, but I think, the most we like American sometimes. Some reason is that this society has a strong, tradition, doing things based on the law. Okay, so it's better for the asylum applicant to tell the truth.
Would you ever, at this point you don't see yourself as seeking asylum anywhere?
No, I will not, because I will always want to work for China. I want to stay there, so I will not ask for asylum. So I will try my best to influence the attitude of our government to let me alone, to allow me work there.
You're afraid when you were detained that they would kick you out and not let you, exile you, basically?
I thought that, but finally they didn't. Yeah.
So. Because I think some people here were thought that that was the deal that was made, that you would never go back.
No such deal. Actually, no such deal.
Because I think sometimes you kind of become less effective if you're stuck, in America and you can't go back. I mean, because your work is about China.
Yeah, my work is in public health issue. It's for China AIDS issues. It's I have reason to work there. We have an institute in Beijing. I'm the director of the institute. I have to go back.
Yeah. Also, this year you've been the Fulbright scholar.
Did
they help you out? The other Fulbrights, did they try to get you out?
Yes. They all sent letters in Africa. In Southeast Asia, in Latin America, in Europe, and in the United States. So they send letters, from, around the world.
So that, so you think, I guess China doesn't want international exchanges, right?
That's true.
Yeah. And also, how much money was the UN going to give to China over this AIDS program?
Actually, U.S. government didn't give much money to China for AIDS issues.
UN, I mean.
Yeah, U.S. government.
UN, United Nations.
Actually, although Chinese government applied the UN Global Fund, but actually UN Global Fund has no money. It's okay. So I don't think.
Oh, no money because the U.S. doesn't give money to them.
Yeah, because
they without the.
Yeah. Actually, I suspect the function of Global Fund because, you know, how can you know UN manage such a big grant? Okay, Global Fund. Okay.
Well, the U.S. is withholding money because of its position on abortion, I guess, the U.S.
Yes, that's true. But recently, because of the AIDS issues, U.S. government become more interested in China. AIDS issues. AIDS is a global pandemic. U.S. government, you know, it's necessary for U.S. government, Chinese government to work together to you know, to help each other.
Do you find among Chinese students who are, say, studying medicine now, in America, say, do they, are there anybody that wants to go back?
Yeah, some you know, researchers, some, you know, reading researchers, they got really good training in the U.S., and now they went back. They played a really, you know, positive role in pushing policy change, and they create some, you know, new, you know, initiative.
You know that group that you were involved with, the CSSM, Chinese...
Chinese Society for the Study of Sexual Minorities.
They got a change in the psychiatric definition, right?
Yeah, it's...
Depathologized.
Yeah, we helped Chinese Psychiatric Association declassify homosexuality as mental illness in China.
What was the effect of what has been the consequence of that declassification?
It's still it's not a complete declassification. It's just 60%. Okay, 60%. It's kind of they still have some concept like ego, dystonic homosexuality or ego dystonic bisexuality. But homosexuality or bisexuality as a whole is not an illness in China.
But have you seen any changes following that?
Yes, there's a lot of media reports. Okay, a lot of media reports.
Because China has never considered it illegal, right, homosexual behavior?
Homosexuality, you know, was not mentioned in the criminal law before, but, you know, explanation of the criminal law, sodomy were mentioned. Sodomy were included in the explanation of criminal law. Sodomy, you know, was thought as kind of hooliganism. Oh. So there's some criminal code to punish people before. But in 1997, the new criminal law just deleted the whole category of hooliganism. So the whole category not. It's existing now.
What's the hooliganism in Chinese?
Chinese, the pronunciation hooliganism is niumang. Okay. Yeah. So
was it a felony, I guess. Huh?
It's
would it probably a felony.
Almost. It's kind of category that it's kind of umbrella category for everything. For everything.
So yeah. In the past, where people said. How many years to jail or what?
Different. In early 1980s, people could be for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, sometimes more than 10 years, and even somebody may be killed in some time. But most of the time, people were detained, were jailed for 2 or 3 years.
You mean executed? By the state?
Executed, yeah. And after mid-1980s, most gay people, you know, when they got detained, they were, you know, they may not be, you know, sentenced for 2 or 3 years. They may be 2 weeks, you know, sort of months.
Were there re-education camps or anything like that?
Detention center or re-education center like that. Yeah. Not too long, yeah. So it was thought as a mental illness after mid of 1980s.
But now, now it's not supposed to be, right?
Yes, not, it's not.
So, do you find that it's, do you feel that among the Chinese you met here in outside China, I mean, do you feel that they know a lot about what's happening in China in terms of AIDS or not?
Actually, you know, many people they don't know. Because even in China, our government don't know much. Okay, no good, you know, survey, no good statistics, and we know some. Recently, people know a lot about Henan because a lot of publicity about Henan. Some reason is that our government covered up so hard, so the media become, you know, it's, you know, our government give, you know, international media, you know, reasons to report. Okay, they want to cover up, and then they, you know, create a lot of troubles for themselves.
But in China now, the press is pretty, is more kind of vibrant, right? I mean, a lot of, is there more investigative reporting in China?
Yeah. Chinese government media become more liberal and investigating a lot of things, but they are still controlled by the propaganda department.
How did that, last year I think you gave me a magazine that was published in China.
Yeah.
That had articles by gay people. Was that a social science institute or something?
Yeah, by, it's a magazine by Chinese Academy of Social Science. Yeah.
So was that, do you think that's a breakthrough or what do you consider that?
It's difficult to say because, you know, people in different positions, they try to push. Okay, they found a different space, different opportunities, and then they break silence. So either way, government want to control and people want to push.
So it's still a
struggle. Yeah.
Do you, when you walk around Beijing, do you, people recognize you?
No, I'm not popular in Beijing because not many people know me. Yeah, but.
Did they show your picture when you were detained and
No, I'm not. You know, I'm not. You know, quite reported in China.
So you're not a celebrity.
Yeah. But
So the, do you think? So, if you go back, you think you'll be able to get back in now, right?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. No, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, my God.